Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer. Now we're going to talk about what it feels like to be afraid and how courage works to stand up to it. So listeners, we want to hear your story of that moment when you felt your bravest. What was that moment that you can remember when you encountered fear and stepped towards it nonetheless? The phone number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. To talk about all this with us is Polly Moreland. She's a documentary filmmaker whose work has taken her to the center of conflict zones, and she didn't feel all that brave while she was doing it. She takes a look at fear and how people get crippled by fear in her new book and how they confront it and find bravery in the face of it. The book is called The Society of Timid Souls or How to Be Brave. Polly Moreland, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Anna. Great to be here.
Now, The Society of Timid Souls, that's the name of your book. And when I picked it up, I was like, that's awesome. I wonder, what does this mean? And it's an actual thing. It's a group that met on West 73rd Street in Manhattan. What was the Society of Timid Souls?
Well, I came across the Society of Timid Souls thanks to an old news story that I happened upon about 3 years ago. And this was a vividly eccentric little self-help group for stage-frightened musicians on the Upper West Side.
In the mid-20th
century? In the 1940s. And they came together and used some then rather kind of radical but rudimentary exposure therapy techniques to try and overcome their fears. And they were led by a concert pianist called Bernard Gabriel. I'm sorry, there's a bleep in the background.
Yes. Be brave, Polly, be brave. We'll get through it.
Concert pianist who led this little group and encouraged all these terrified musicians to, in a way, face their fears and recollect how to be brave. And this was a story that really caught my imagination and seemed like a little inspiration to me, really, as to how people who weren't naturally brave might nevertheless go about teaching themselves a level of bravery. I mean, what was so fascinating about the Society of Timid Souls was the timing of the thing, in that the group met for the first time in the immediate aftermath of Pearl Harbor. So I was very mindful of how this was a little group in frightening times, as we are today, and how they came together and they, in their own small way, learned to be brave.
Paul, in Brooklyn, you have a story about finding your bravery. What happened?
I have a really bad fear of heights, and I was working in a theater, and unfortunately, a lot of the jobs in a theater, you have to get up into the lighting, into the catwalks. And one particular theater in Midtown, in order to get into the lighting truss, you had to stand on the catwalk and, you know, kind of get over the railing to the other side, hold onto the railing with one foot and one arm, and then kind of stretch and leap across to the catwalk, which are the lighting truss, which is held up by wires. So once you push out over onto that, put one foot on and the other hand on, you have to stretch over, and the thing kind of flexes over it with you while you move across. And that was my moment of bravery.
That's a scary thing for somebody who's afraid of heights.
It was a big drop to the floor, so it was about 30, 40 feet.
Did it make you less afraid of heights?
That did not, but it certainly it gave me an appreciation for doing something that needed to be done, and that satisfaction was really pretty important to me. I actually felt like I heard a choir of angels singing. It was that big a moment for me. It was just like, when I got out there on the other side, it was just pretty overwhelming.
Paul, thank you so much for your call. Polly Moreland, angels come up pretty frequently in your book. You basically do a series of interviews all over the world, nearly 100 interviews with people about how they've encountered fear. That hearing angels, that stepping towards something, that feeling like you're just going to have to trust that you're going to be protected when you're facing that fear is something that seems to come up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there were all sorts of people who in very, very different situations, and these are dangerous situations I'm talking. So here I'm not talking about stage fright. I'm talking about people facing earthquakes or a one man facing a suicide bomber on the London Underground, another woman facing an attacking Rottweiler, and each of these people described a sensation whereby they were acting before, in a way, they thought it through, where there was some impulse, where the only thing to do was to go forward. And so while there wasn't necessarily an angelic sense in quite as acutely as Paul described just then with necessarily choirs of angels, there was a very strong sense amongst many of the people I spoke to that there was really only one thing they could do. I had no choice. There was nothing else I could have done. These were the kinds of lines that they said to me. And I was very interested talking to them at kind of unpicking the traits in their character that perhaps pushed them to act in this way, and whether there were things in their background or things in their training that had somehow prepared them to react with such dynamism in an extreme situation.
Well, that's something that I want to ask you about, because in some places you talk about courage as a learned skill. In other places, you talk about it as an inherent trait. And then there are also moments where you talk about courage where it doesn't seem like the person had a lot of agency. If they were in the military, they had to go into battle. So do you have to necessarily have a choice for it to count as courage?
It's a very good question. So there are very different elements of choice in different sorts of bravery. I would probably say that there always has to be some background level of choice, even if it's you chose a job in the military. Also, many people in the military may have been in a very dire situation on a battlefield, but then just a handful of them have done really incredible things and things be over and above and beyond, if you like, the ordinary courage to do something extraordinary in those difficult situations. But what I would say is it's not always a kind of oh right, a back of an envelope risk assessment, because there often isn't the time for that. But I would probably argue that there were elements in their lives where they felt they had the power to make a difference, that there was something in their personality that in a way trusted their ability to make a choice, and therefore they were able to follow their instincts in an almost reflexive way, but that either they'd been trained to trust their ability to take a choice, or there were things in their character or in their background or in their upbringing or in their worldview that allowed them to understand what level of agency they had and to trust their own self-efficacy, if you like.
I'm speaking to Polly Moreland, the author of The Society of Timid Souls, or How to Be Brave. Cheryl, in Rego Park, Queens, you have a moment where you had to make a choice that felt very brave at the moment. What was your story?
Well, thank you very much for putting me on. I think that my story relates to, unfortunately, many other people. I had to choose to save my mother's life or allow doctors to persuade me that her leg had to come off in order to save her life. She was an 86-year-old diabetic. She had developed an infection in the bone, osteomyelitis, due to a pressure sore from improper treatment in another hospital, another issue.
So you had this choice about what to do for your mom's care.
That's right.
What felt brave about it? What was the moment that you felt fear and had to make that choice?
Well, I was afraid that my mother would die. I was told that she would die if her leg did not come off. She needed to have her leg cut off. 12 or 13 different doctors told me that that wound would not heal and that I needed to take her leg off. Well, the first time the first doctor told me this, I knew that had I taken off her leg, it would be a death sentence, and she might live in a matter of weeks and die.
So you had to make that decision.
Let me finish. Therefore, I had to find another way to save her life. And there are other treatments. Many of the treatments that are used for the elderly, especially elderly with diabetes, the presumption is that the family, that the patient will not have the wherewithal to put in the effort, the time and the effort, to do all the treatments, to really fight for their life. And I and my family put in tremendous amount of time and effort.
And your mom is still living, correct?
She's still living. She has both legs, both feet. She's up walking. She broke both hips. She's up walking on, and that wound that I was told would not heal has healed.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Cheryl. Phyllis in Brooklyn, what's your story about courage?
Yes, I wanted to say that fear does not always have to be a rational thing. Fear can be irrational even to the person who experiences it. I knew that my fear of the dark was irrational. That did not change the fact that I was terribly, terribly afraid. There was one night when I was at home alone with my daughter. The lights went out. I tore out of the house as if some demon was after me. I had to stop myself. You have to go back. You have to get this sleeping child. It took all of the courage as if I was entering a burning building. And as I picked her up, I was actually trembling. It was a moment of courage. It was great courage. It was the whole thing I know was irrational, but that's the way fear works sometimes for some people. And I still kept that fear for a very long time. It gradually went away, but fear is a very complex thing and very different in the minds of many people.
Phyllis, thank you for your call. And Polly Moreland, that's something that you address in the book, because in moments you're talking about people who have been in the middle of warfare, and then you're talking about Renee Fleming and stage fright and the crippling fear of failure on stage while everyone is watching. And does courage work the same way, whether it's life-threatening or not?
Well, do you know, when I started working on this, I wasn't sure what the answer would be. There's a lovely line from a French philosopher called Montaigne who said, fear ravishes our judgment. And how true is that? What was very fascinating to me as a result of having talked to people right across the board, some of them facing very, very palpable fears, you know, a bullet, a ball, a tumor, a wave, an earthquake, and then other people facing fears that were within them and that were not an actual jeopardy to life and limb. And actually, in the main, I found the processes of courage, just as your caller just then outlined, in many senses, the processes of overcoming a possibly irrational fear, or certainly not a life-threatening fear of a life-threatening source. The process of being brave is remarkably similar across the board. So in a way, the symptoms of fear come across in the same way, and your heart, you pump adrenaline, you shake, your mouth goes dry, you find it difficult to make a decision, you're perhaps rooted to the spot, you're perhaps frozen. Those mechanisms of fear are remarkably similar across the spectrum. And so, too, are the processes of courage, of pushing through that fear barrier. And this came as a real surprise to me, actually. And in one sense, made me realize how much one can learn from people who've been in really, really extreme situations and how they've overcome terrible fears in very dangerous situations. But some of the things they've done can nevertheless be useful to perhaps us more ordinary, the timid souls amongst us who are just going about our own lives, and we have these smaller or more domestic or less rational fears that we nevertheless feel we need to overcome. So I would feel that there's a great deal to be learnt from the grand courages, and that they have far more in common with almost invisible braveries than one might think.
And you spoke about timid souls, and one of the things that I kept thinking about reading about the Society of Timid Souls that met in the 1940s in Manhattan is I thought, what, I wonder how digital culture has changed this whole timidity index. I mean, are there, if you're timid in real life, you might not be timid so much when you're engaging with digital community and have it find a different sort of courage.
Well, there was one very fascinating story that I came across in the course of researching this book, which keys in absolutely to that. So I spoke with two
people who suffer from, men who suffer from agoraphobia. So this is a sort of social anxiety syndrome where, which ultimately becomes so debilitating that they can't leave the house, they can't work, they can't interact with other human beings in anything resembling an ordinary way. And both of these men had overcome their fears through a process of exposure therapy, like the original Society of Timid Souls, but it was an exposure therapy that they did online. So what they did was they'd go out for a walk. To most of us, the most simple walk in the world, the walk to their local grocery store, or walk to the center of the town they lived in. And they filmed it on their camera phone, you know, on the camera on their phone, and then they posted it online. And these videos that were then a way of reaching out to other agoraphobic people around the world, and the sense of having an audience, a kind of new media platform on which to practice their particular learning to be brave, was a very kind of rich scene for them, and really helped them push through. Through their fears in that sense. So that was an interesting example of a way in which kind of new media can liberate the timid soul.
I love that. Well, Polly Moreland, let's close. You have this great quote from Bernard Gabriel, the concert pianist who ran those gatherings in Manhattan. He said, "I can see no reason why the shy and timid in any community couldn't get together and help each other." Your book is terrific in giving you that sense of community and how we each individually confront fear and how others have gotten around it. The book is The Society of Timid Souls, or How to Be Brave. Polly Moreland, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Coming up, we're going to talk about what you'll stand in line for and what you won't in New York City this summer. I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer.